Vancouver Island, a land full of rich, diverse cultures where you will find hippies and rednecks at the same local brew pub, blue-collar and white-collar camping side-by-side at the lakes, and old and young and everyone in between with one thing in common, we love our island. You really don't have to look far in the outdoor merchandising world to realize that there are over a billion different options of things that you could purchase that are going to be the next best thing inside your backcountry kit. Here are a few things that I have learned and gear that I have found trustworthy and dependable over the years in my different adventures here on Vancouver Island. Well, it is an absolutely beautiful fall day here on Vancouver Island, and I cannot believe that we're already halfway through October. And not only that, but we're actually at the end, almost at the end of season one of the Wild Islander podcast. We only have two more episodes after this one. It is absolutely flown by. It's really been a pleasure and a lot of fun to put together everything. But man, I just don't even know where the time has gone. This has been a really cool experience. And I've met with more people than I ever hoped that I would during this last couple months. So thanks for all of you that have been listening along, being a part of this journey. It has been a lot of fun. So I thought that I would put together a little bit of a resource package for anybody that might be useful to. And I know that there is a very big range of people that are going to be listening to an episode like this. Those that have all the gear, have lots of experience, and may have a lot more experience than someone like me. And I know that there's others that maybe don't and want to get out into the outdoors and want to have a new experience, want to have new adventures, and don't really even know where to look. And that's one thing that I've had the privilege of having different conversations with people over the years, is they've asked questions like, what's worked for you? What gear has been helpful? So one of the original ideas for the pilot for this podcast was to kind of put this gear review thing. And so I had this like 40-minute monologue of all the different things that I thought were a great idea and to add in. And my wife, Lynn's, listened to the pilot, and she very gently said, well, I don't know that that's how you want to start this thing off with. This huge big list of all the things that could possibly be helpful, that might not put it in the right direction right away. People don't know you yet. You know, you got to build that relationship. So if you've been traveling along this journey of the different places we've been experiencing on Vancouver Island and the stories that we've been sharing, this one is specifically around just things that I have found useful that have helped keep me and others that I know safe, and have been just something that have added to whatever trip that it is that we have been on. And so I, like you've heard in this show, do a lot of different activities in the outdoors, anything from fishing to hiking to climbing to paddle sports, driving around, doing back roads. Like, there's a lot of different things that we do. So where do you even start? So I'm going to specifically go with like backcountry camping. Let's say, kind of in the scenario that you want to do an overnight, you want to go camping, and you want to go maybe backpacking or even truck camping, there's a few things that I always keep with me. And I know that like it's really hard to even start sometimes. There's so many different options, and not everybody has the $10,000 budget to be able to buy high-end everything to be able to trick out your entire kit. I know that's definitely not been my journey. So I found some ways to kind of get around a few things and also kind of pare it down, because you're going to find a lot of different places that are going to sell you something that you desperately need. You know, like they're like, this is the thing that you need in order to have a successful trip. Obviously, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt. Somebody's trying to sell something. Somebody's trying to sell something. So to look through that lens is a really important part of that. But what I have found extremely useful is secondhand, and I know that that's not anything new, but I have found a really, a great strategy being able to utilize things like thrift stores, marketplace online, Kijiji, Craigslist. There's a ton of different stuff that you can do. So one of my first kind of tips that I do, if you're going to be looking for gear, so you're looking at next spring, next summer, if you're not into the winter activities that are coming up for backcountry stuff, if you're looking towards next year, things that you can start looking for. So Where to start? What I usually do is one of the things that I always tell people is a shop out of season. And what I mean by that is in the summertime, I'm usually shopping for the winter. I'm always shopping or looking for deals that are, you know, one season ahead. So if I'm looking for something for a fall hunt, if I'm looking for something for a spring trip, you know, where I want to go somewhere, or the summer, I'm looking out of season so that I can find those deals. So whether you're looking online at different retailers, whether you're looking at thrift stores, whether you're looking at marketplace, a lot of the time you'll find those deals out of season. So try to shop a couple seasons ahead. So if you're looking at next summer, you want to do a couple different trips, there's places you want to go, start looking for that stuff now. And the beautiful thing about things like Instagram and Facebook is that if you type anything in, those algorithms will definitely help you out, and they will bombard you with different options. And all of a sudden you're like, I had no idea that there were 30 different pairs of hiking shoes out there for me. And they will chase you down and give you all that information. They're really quite good at making sure to put that stuff in front of you. So that's kind of tip number one, is that that's one of the things I do, is I'll put in a search. And I mean, again, not rocket science, but if you're looking for things, put that search in there. They usually help you out with the rest. You can add brand names into your search, which is a really important thing that you can do. And then it really just comes down to frequenting the spots that you like as often as you possibly can. So I try to do different stores that I have here, you know, on the North Island. I'll frequent those as often as I can. But that's just if you're looking for stuff. Patience is the key. If you're going to wait right before you're going to go somewhere, you're going to pay that price, whatever that price is, because that's just where you put yourself. So here's kind of a gear breakdown of different things that I bring with me. Trip plan, I've talked lots about and how you do that. And so I won't get too much into the detail of that, but communication devices. So we've talked about it. It was a couple different kinds that we've used over the years. Spot devices. Are very, very user-friendly, really simple, not a whole lot of communication back and forth. They're not great for two-way communication, though I believe that the newer models are starting to offer a bit more of those options. InReach is the one that I have definitely benefited from, because you've got that two-way communication. So it's a bit of a pill to swallow when you're trying to buy it brand new. You're looking at $500-$600, unless you can find one used, and that's a bit sketchy because you just don't know the person's you know, how they take care of their own gear. So kind of a buyer beware kind of situation, but the plans and stuff like that aren't crazy expensive. They range all over the place, you know, $15 a month all the way up to whatever kind of frequency you need to have for data. But that is a really nice option to have, and it's a really great peace of mind option, especially for the island, because there are so many different places that don't have cell service. So I found that very, very helpful and useful when you can get your hands on one. Compasses and maps. So I know this one's a little bit like trying to learn a new language, because there's so it just seems to be so many dynamics towards a compass that people don't really fully understand. And so having one in your kit can be just as much damage as it can be helpful, because people forget a lot of the time how to use one. So if you are interested in using a compass, it's going to take some time, and it takes a little bit of effort in order to really be sharp on how it works. But it really is simple when it's all broken down, but it does require some time. The compass that I have found that has been really, really useful is the Silva. I believe my model is the Silva Ranger, and I think you can still get it at Mech. And if not, you can find it different places online. I think Amazon might carry it as well now. But it is a really nice option. It's got the mirror option as well, so you can see your bearings and stuff, for those that have a little bit more experience of what that means. But I'm hoping to put together some videos over the fall and winter that will have a little bit more resources on how to use some of those gear, just like the compass, because I find that that's one that can cause more hindrance by having it in their kit and then not really knowing how to use it. So that's a really important one to know how to use, but also, you know, it's an important part of your kit as well, because it's a pretty reliable piece of equipment. Backpacks. I've tried a couple different backpacks and had friends that have tried different backpacks, and it really depends on what you're going to be doing. So if you're going to do heavy loads, and by heavy loads, I mean like overnight gear. So you're going to be having a tent, you're going to have sleeping bag and mat, food for a couple of days. You're wanting a pretty robust backpack, and you want it fitted specifically kind of to your size. And so a lot of backpack companies have done a great job of making frames that actually can fit your body type, whether you're male or female. You can get one that can be articulated to your specific, like if you've got a short back or if you've got a long back. The one that I have found consistent in my experience has been the Osprey backpacks. I found them very, very versatile, very, very durable, and they have a lifetime guarantee, like a real one, that is really quite solid. So I cannot recommend them enough. They really have been super helpful, and a lot of different options of when you're looking at a backpack. For example, my first backpack that I ever bought, it was a top load, so that means you could get into the top of the backpack to fill it in, and it had one zipper on the side that was kind of helpful, but not really. What I learned over time is that it's really nice, instead of having to empty your entire bag out into your tent or anything, if you don't have to do that, it's really nice to be able to keep things tidy if you can access it from basically, if you can access the main compartment from all four sides. And what I mean by that is from the top, from both sides, and from the bottom. And if they don't have that option, I'm not too interested, because I've found that it's very, very helpful to have that access on any of the different sides. So Osprey, I've found with their bigger packs and their longer trek packs, very, very, very helpful. So that's something I've found that's been really, really, the accessibility has been something that's worth paying your money for. And it is nice, because buying quality gear is so much better, in my opinion, than trying to buy something that's kind of cheap every couple of years. There's a lot more waste to that, and so there's environmental impact there too. If you're buying gear that lasts, that actually has some quality behind it, and you can use it for many, many years, opposed to having to just replace, but in case, you know, maybe you can repair instead of it, that's a way better option environmentally. So that's something that I would definitely recommend looking into, is getting that quality so that you don't have to replace it every single year. Hiking boots and shoes. Now, there is a variety of different hiking boots and shoes out there. There's going to be, you know, anything from like something you can get at a regular department store, kind of like a Superstore or Walmart or Costco, and you're going to get what you pay for at that point. You're not necessarily getting something that is robust and strong and that's built for durability. You might have something that'd be nice for trails. And so if you're looking for that, you don't need a huge amount of support. What I mean by support is something that's like really hugging your foot and kind of guarding it against whatever kind of terrain that you're going to be going into. And so you can have like a hiker shoe, which is a really low profile, doesn't go up your ankle quite a bit. And you can have varying degrees all the way up until you get to almost what's like a military boot, like a full size boot, which is like halfway up your calf. And so there's a very, very different feel and use for each one of those styles. But basically how my rule of thumb is the longer that you're going to be going out somewhere, the more support that you're going to need. Like that's what you're going to need in order to achieve it safely. And the age old tip that people still learn about today and still have to go through this this unfortunate thing is, when you buy new boots, do not buy them right beforehand. Break them in. And there are a variety of different ways that you can do that. But the way that I have found the most helpful is that if I'm going to get a new pair of boots for a season, for whatever activity that I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be buying them a month or two in advance, and I'm going to be wearing them a minimum of, you know, 7 to 10 times at more and more extended time periods. So as to make sure that those rub marks and those different places inside of your feet are not creating a whole host of issues, because it's something that people don't really think about and take too seriously a lot of the time. But foot injuries are absolutely debilitating. If you are in the middle of nowhere and you've hiked 2 or 3 days into a location and you've got blisters all over your feet, it can cause a really serious problem. It may sound like it shouldn't be, but it really is. It can make a trip go from okay to really sour really, really quickly. It's avoidable, like a lot of those things are. And if you can plan ahead and make sure that you find something that's fitted, a lot of outdoor companies will have people that are professionals and that, you know, spend time being able to fit different things to your shoes. It's a little bit trickier when you're buying things online and you have to kind of base it off of reviews at that point. But I can't really recommend a specific brand or anything like that at this point, because it's really subject to the individual. You need to find something that works for your feet, whether you're a wider or narrower or shorter or longer. There's a lot of pieces to that. But the one rule of thumb that I do always come back to is that you need that extra support if you're going to be going on a longer journey. You need less support if you're just doing different day trips or, close to home activities like that. Rain gear. Now, rain gear is probably the most readily available thing that you're going to find just about anywhere. And there's varying degrees. And the one thing that I would recommend is if you can get something that's breathable, that's what you will find is going to be the most comfortable thing inside of your kit. And you really do get, again, what you pay for in that. I've used, the regular run-of-the-mill $30, $40, raincoat. And for short term, that's fine. If you're doing things and chores around the yard, that's one thing. But if you're going to be doing any type of exertion of any kind, all of that sweat and moisture that you're building up just stays right inside of it. And it's a very uncomfortable thing. It can be just as damaging as not wearing something at a lot of the time because you just get soaked. So something that is breathable is going to be very, very helpful. I have found basically anything with Gore-Tex for the most part. There's a lot of different competing brands that have that breathability, so you have to do your research. But I have found that Gore-Tex is pretty solid when it comes to being able to wick water. And there's different instructions that you need to do that. So if you find that your jackets are what's called wetting out, so they're like really getting super, super wet, and the water's kind of coming in, a lot of them are designed to have that water repellency actually activated again. And there's different instructions. You can use different cleaners that you can use that help with that. I've found Grainger's, which you can find at most local shops, is pretty much the standard, in my opinion, for washing any type of breathable rain gear. It just helps restore the breathability, but it also brings that water repellency back. And so you'll usually activate that in the dryer, but you really need to find what your specific type and jacket is designed to do because they're all a little bit different. Some of them are not good for the dryers. Other ones, like the higher end ones, a lot of the time that's recommended because then that water repellency actually returns. And it's quite remarkable. I just did it recently with my coat. And washed it again, and instantly the water beads. And so what I mean by that is it kind of collects, right? It looks like little beads, and it rolls off the shoulder of your jacket. And so that can be the difference between a really nice hike and a really terrible one, just by simply washing it correctly and bringing that along. At the very least, if you're on a budget, though, there are a couple different options that you can look for, even if it's just rain ponchos and things like that you have inside your bag. If you're doing, just kind of regular hikes that aren't crazy involved or far away. One company that is really, really neat. I'm going to also preface, I don't get any endorsements for any of this. This is just strictly Benj's opinion. So take it for what it is. That is what it is. I would love to hear from anybody who has better suggestions, but this is just what I've found and hopefully is useful to somebody out there. Frog Togs is one company I've found. They're a little bit harder to find in Canada, but you can find them. I believe Cabela's will carry them and Amazon had them as well. I'll have to double check on that, but I believe that they still have them as well. Basically, they're a really affordable, breathable water option that do not look flattering whatsoever. They are really bulky looking they're not going to be your high-end nice Arc'teryx jacket. That's just not what they look like at all. But man, they are quite neat when it comes to breathability and packability. So they pack really, really small and they repel water really, really well. And so if you can get your hands on a rain set, Frog Togs rain set, they are pretty, pretty neat if you're looking for something on a budget. And every once in a while, they'll show up at a thrift store for somebody who's passed those along. Another thing that is really, really important for any kit, especially if you're going to be going for any distance past a day, but it still is going to be very, very, very helpful in any type of event where you are experiencing an emergency, is water filtration. So that can vary from a whole host of different options that are out there, but one thing that I keep in my bags all the time is a Life Straw. It's a very, very simple, more recent invention where it basically is just it's about an inch and a half tube with a lip piece, and you can get a variety of different styles that will, screw into a different Nalgene water bottle, or you'll find their own water bottles, or you just get the straw itself, and you can get these from, 20, 25 bucks. But it's something that I rarely ever leave home without. here's a kind of a basic rule of thumb. You can survive without food in theory for like pretty much indefinitely. Like you can go 30, 40 days without food and you're not going to be great. You're not going to be in good shape, but you're going to be alive. 4 days without water, you're looking at death. It's a real big deal. And especially if you're looking at, you know, bad water sources, it can escalate very, very quickly. You don't have to look far. If you ever watch the show Alone on the History Channel, it's quite remarkable how fast it can go for somebody who has water issues. And so there was a couple of different contestants on that show who had, you know, chosen to drink these water sources without boiling it correctly because they were using a lot of primitive different tools. And so, I mean, the very most basic one is to boil the water. And so you want to be using that principle where you can. But if you're not going to be bringing a stove and you're going to have a situation where you could be there for a few days, and if something goes wrong, at the very least, a life straw is a really cheap and simple option that you can carry inside of your kit that I fully recommend. And then when it comes to the bigger water systems and stuff, I've had a lot of success with different ones by MSR, which is Mountain Safety Research, I believe. And they have a lot of different options that are really, really quite nice. And that kind of segues into stoves. They have a lot of different stoves as well. I really have loved their gear. They're a company that really spend a lot of time developing things that last well, that you can have repair kits to. So again, buying that quality that maybe you're only going to have to buy one every 10 to 15 years, opposed to whatever, you know, special cheap model you're going to get off of Amazon that, you know, came with a free paracord knife. Like there's a lot of different options out there, but I'm a big believer in buying things that are quality that you can use. There's just a lot less impact that way if you can have things that you're not replacing every single year. Multi-tool and knife are something that I always carry as well. I have found a lot of success with Leatherman multi-tools and Buck Knives, which is out of the States. Both really reliable companies with lifetime warranties. Again, quality, but you can find cheaper and more accessible options at places like Canadian Tire. You'll find something, but something that holds a good edge that actually is going to have some strength. And researching what your steels are and stuff like that are an essential thing to figure out what is going to be helpful to you. And that's why I've chosen those two companies, because a lot of the time they're doing that for me already. Emergency kit. Inside of that, it's kind of do a bit of a fire drill going through all of it, but basically a foil blanket, which you can get at any hardware store pretty much across the board for like $1.99. And that thing can be the difference between life and death. Super cheap, super simple, big tin foil blanket that folds up really small, takes up almost no space or weight, essential to any kit. Flashlight and extra batteries, Band-Aids, waterproof matches. I've really had a lot of success with UCO waterproof matches, if you can get your hands on them. They're quite wonderful and very resilient. A lighter is a really helpful thing to have too. But just a note, if you are going to be doing alpine camping, me and a couple other of my friends and colleagues over the years have had issues with butane at high elevations. They don't seem to light and burn long. And so I used to keep a butane lighter in my kit all the time, but I've stopped based on that, being in the alpine and having those different experiences there, I don't want to have something that may or may not work. So I just regular Bic lighter, and then the lighter or the matches is what I would carry with that. And then something for fire starter. So one of the ones that I put in there, and it's not like terribly well known, but it's kind of a fun one, and it's always one that I teach to kids when they're building their backcountry kits, is a bag of Cheetos. Just the regular puff Cheetos, not the hard crunchy ones, but like the puffed up ones. Those things burn fantastically well, and they just kind of slowly burn, and all the oils and everything in them are a great fire starter. So I keep them in there. I also keep it in there because if you get cramps and you need that sodium boost, and what I mean by cramps is like you get that leg muscle cramp, and that's an awful, awful pain if you've ever had it. It's excruciating, and you'll get them sometimes in your leg or your back or your arms, and depending on where it happens for you. And they're terribly uncomfortable, and usually that's to do with a couple different things, but one of them is usually sodium. And your body sweats it out really, really fast while you're in the backcountry. And so I actually keep one in there to kind of give that extra little boost if I'm feeling like one of my legs is going to cramp up, because you usually know it's coming. So I keep that in there as not just a fire starter, but also as a cramp producer. It's kind of a fun one. Cedar is really great. A little cedar branch shavings or wood shavings is really helpful. And if you can find it, and if you know what it looks like, pitchwood. So inside of like a fir tree specifically, so the Douglas fir here on Vancouver Island, you'll walk through the woods and you'll find these old growth stumps. And sometimes you'll find this thing that just looks like a big old candlestick. And it's one last piece of the tree that's still standing there. That usually is pitch that's been collected inside of where that tree at one point had to repair part of its inner rings workings to keep the tree solid and keep it from falling. And so that last bit of the tree, those stumps, of those old crumbly, you know, the ones like the red, you got the red wood that's all kind of rotting off of it, but it's still got that one little spire in there. A lot of the time that'll be pitchwood and it is very flammable. I'll shave that down and keep that in my kit as well and have that alongside my fire starter stuff. And it's kind of a fun one to be able to teach kids and show them something that's kind of a neat resource that they can find anywhere. And once you memorize the smell, oh, it's one of the most, it's just incredible. It's a beautiful smell. And so I always know when I've hit it, because if you cut into it with a knife or something, you can tell, you're like, yep, that's pitchwood. It's got a really, really distinct smell. This is the smell of the forest. Paracord 550 rope, and the 550 stands for 550 pounds breaking strength. You can find that at most hardware stores. You can find it online. They're not all created equal. And so you want to find one that's got some sort of certification or backing behind it. But it is a really nice option because it has multiple strands inside the cord. It's made up of multiple different cords inside, and they're very, very helpful and handy for a variety of different things that you might need extra string for, repairing shoes, clothes, tents, tarps. There's just a whole host of different things, and they work great if you break shoelaces, if you have those extra. And in fact, a lot of people will actually replace their laces on their hiking boots with paracord so that they have that extra option, because it is really strong and it is very, very robust, but it's also very, very helpful and diverse because it has all those little strings if you take it apart inside. So it's just a neat option and very, very popular with, it was a different thing for when I worked at Camp Bob as a camp director, where you did it as a craft, where you could make these bracelets that you can buy elsewhere, but we decided to make them and yeah, it's a really great option and really fun, but also really, really useful as well. And I always keep garbage bags. Always keep a couple garbage bags to double as rainproofing for either my backpack. If for some reason I lost my coat, if I need to be able to pack out garbage, because that's really, really essential as well. And being a good steward of the backcountry is practicing the leave no trace principles. And if you've never heard the term leave no trace, it's a wonderful way of making sure that the wilderness stays the wilderness. And so packing out stuff sometimes is required. If you know you find a bunch of garbage that's not yours, a garbage bag is a really nice way to be able to help with that. And it's also a great way to keep your stuff all clean and everything all cleaned up and making sure that it's not dripping or anything, because that can become a real problem. I found that keeping Ziplocs, the stronger ones, the Ziploc freezer bags are also a part that I always keep in there. More because if I'm using food and I have different things alongside the food, different juices from meat, packages that may have foodstuffs on them, it's a better way to seal them. And I'm not worried about them leaking into my bag, because most places you're going to go, if you're going to go off the beaten path, or if you're going to be following the professional paths that are way out in the middle of nowhere, there rarely are garbage cans, because there's not a whole host of staff that are just out there at your beck and call. Like, you are the steward of what you're bringing into the wilderness. Nobody else is going to do that for you. So it's really important for you to be that person who's going to practice that initiative. So that's the Leave No Trace initiative and what it's all about, packing in what you pack out, take nothing but pictures and leave nothing but footprints. That is pretty much it. That was a bit of a firing squad, just boom, 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 all of it out there at once. But I really wanted to put something that like this together to see if it would be useful for people. So if this is a useful resource for you, I would love to hear from you. If you found this incredibly boring and useless, I would also like to hear about that because, like I hope you have heard before, I really do want to create resources for people who either are new to Vancouver Island or also want to experience this incredible place in the wilderness that's around us. And if I can do anything to help along the way to make that a success, that is something I'm very passionate about and I want to do. So sharing the stories, talking about the experiences, and explaining where these places are and what you can do in them is a real passion of mine, because I don't want to be somebody who keeps people from that opportunity in any way, shape, or form. Thanks so much, Wildlanders. Have a great week. We'll see you next Wednesday.